From the Stick Up Butter Studios in New Brighton, Minnesota, I'm Ann Lundholm, and this show has everything. The open road, the wonders of nature, the sleeping in your car of it all. We're going to be talking about road trips this week, and one road trip in particular. And with me to do this are some of my favorite people. From Salad Dressing Room Studios in West Roxbury, New York, it's Bobby Huslin Pape. Hi, Bobby.
Massachusetts, not New York. The Commonwealth of Massachusetts. Oh. Thank you.
This is what happens with cut and paste. M-A. West New York, Massachusetts, it's all the same thing, right?
Just the New England, North Atlantic, liberal elite. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. And from Money Pit Studios in Detroit, Michigan, it's Meredith, the MVH Van Harn. Good evening, Meredith.
Good evening. What if I was also in New York?
Whoa. And joining us today, definitely not in New York, is our correspondent on the road, the Steve Hartman of Tishy, if you will, from Bravo's hit reality TV series Below Deck Studios. It's Jeremy Holmes. Good late afternoon, Jeremy.
Hello, friends. Oh, actually, let me say one thing. This podcast is brought to you by Bones Coffee Company, which we'll get into in a little bit.
Okay. Is this mushroom coffee? Because I don't fuck with mushroom coffee.
No. It says coffee right in the name.
So does the mushroom
coffee. Actually, it says Bones Coffee. That's
is it made of bones?
No.
Hmm. Do you know that for sure?
No.
That's not in the copy, is it? I like to think of Jeremy Moore as the Charles Carroll of this podcast.
Ooh.
Oh, that's the other thing.
Second
I was
Secret
say.
Family?
I don't know who either of the people that you said I was are.
Steve Hartman? He's the guy on CBS that like goes around America and does like little tear-jerky feel-good pieces.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, if some high school senior breaks both his legs in a car accident, but then his teammates carry him over the line to score a touchdown to break a record, Steve Hartman is there to tell the story.
So no joke, Steve Hartman was on my mind because just this morning I watched one where it was a 13-year-old foster child who was getting kicked out of foster care who had kidney disease, and because he didn't have a permanent residence, he couldn't get a kidney transplant, so his math teacher adopted him.
Oh.
Right?
Yep. He's going to make you cry. And then he's going to make you cry again with the same story a few days later when they air it on CBS Sunday morning again.
God, yeah. Way to put pressure on all the other math teachers.
That's true.
That's true. All right. So, as always, we'll start with a little small talk. We will see what's in our mailbag. We'll get the skinny on Jeremy's trip, which I'm really looking forward to. We'll make some Tishy recommendations, and we'll let you know how you can get involved with the show. Bobby, you are on small talk duty tonight.
I am, but before I tell my small talk, I was just inspired to open ChatGPT, and all I typed was, create some fictional news stories in the style of Steve Hartman. And we've been given small towns, big heart. And then it's a fairly, you know, there's a few paragraphs here. Followed by the mystery of Mrs. Henderson's garden.
That tracks.
Both of those are incredibly believable. I can hear him saying, in the quaint town of Maplewood, nestled amidst the rolling hills of Vermont, a heartwarming story has captured the attention of the nation. It all began when 10-year-old Tommy Jenkins decided to take matters into his own hands after witnessing the struggles of the local homeless population. I'm not going to read all of it, but Tommy, armed with nothing but kindness and a big heart, set up a makeshift lemonade stand on the sidewalk outside his house. But it wasn't just any lemonade stand. It was a beacon of hope.
Oh, boy.
This is it. I wonder if they're just paid actors and this is just right. Because this is absolutely a Steve Hartman story.
Yep.
Anyway. Didn't Steve Hartman do a story about a guy who collected washing machines once? Or like the Society of Washing Machine Appreciators?
That's actually a pretty good story.
Yeah, I think it was.
Forget it. Let's drop Tishy. Let's launch a Steve Hartman appreciation pod.
You know, there's a lot of content there.
Yeah.
I'm looking at pictures of this guy, and I feel as though I've never seen him in my life.
Oh.
We're going to catch you up. And while you're at it, now just Google Charles Carroll. Very different look. While you do that, Small Talk Tonight is brought to you by Bobby Pape, brand ambassador.
Ooh la la.
Yeah. I have been working a new part-time job, very part-time job, for a few weeks on the side. I love my day job that I have in Boston. I'm glad to be here doing this, and that's fine. But you may have caught on that managing a small arts nonprofit, as I've done for many years, doesn't pay particularly well. And you may have also recalled my griping about things like a massive construction project at Mayfair Lane and not always having a tenant in the house and other things that result in costing money. So I've been looking for some part-time work. And one of the reasons we started a couple minutes late tonight is because I rushed home and ate dinner after one of my new gigs, which is doing like beer, wine, and liquor tasting at liquor stores. I am a brand ambassador, and I was hired by a regional company here who represents a bunch of distributors and breweries and things like that. And it's actually, I mean, it's the kind of work I like, so it's good, but put on my best all-black outfit, like I'm going to burgle the place. And then I go in, and I set up a little table, and I have a little ice bucket, and I buy whatever I'm sampling and some ice. They gave me a credit card. And I pour little taster shots for people. And for the last couple of weeks, I have been hustling a new product called Sun Cruiser, which is a vodka iced tea in a few different fruit flavors.
Googling?
Yeah, Sun Cruiser. It's a new product from Boston Beer, the fine folks who bring you Sam Adams and all sorts of other stuff. They own a lot of things now. And it's fine. It looks like a can of Truly or White Claw, but it's not carbonated. I'll spare you the sales pitch, except I'll say it is actually pretty good. I've had a fair amount of it now since I've been sampling it for a few weeks.
But Bobby, you should give us your sales pitch. Like, you have it memorized, right?
Well, I mean, it sort of depends on, I don't oversell it. You know, this stuff is 100 calories a can. It's only 4.5 ABV, so you can swap it out for a light beer. And it has no bubbles in it. It's not a seltzer, so you can drink it all day without feeling bloated, basically. Summer drink. It's, you know, iced tea, and one of them's got lemonade in it. Like, that's been fine. I've sampled some other stuff, too. Some of those canned cocktails, like they have on airplanes, that are, like, ready-to-go cocktails, and a couple of other things. But basically, just a new little sliver of chapter in my work life here, because you know me, I have to have at least three jobs at all times.
Yes, you do. I'm confused because I'm on their website. I'm looking at the can on the website that says Sun Cruiser, iced tea, vodka, and then underneath it, it says classic iced tea.
Yes.
So which is it?
Well, it's the classic iced tea flavor. And?
Oh. Okay.
Because they have, they also have
flavors.
They also have
an
iced tea and lemonade.
Yep.
You know, your classic Arnold Palmer or John Daly, yep, if you will, since it has the vodka in it. And then there's a raspberry and a peach.
I see.
I don't have a power
ranking. I like the color scheme.
For them. Yeah, it's cute. It's kind of retro and fun.
Yeah.
And now that I've been working in these liquor stores, I've learned a few things. One, some liquor stores are awful and some are pretty good. Today, the one I was just in is in my old neighborhood where I used to work and live in Brighton. And it is, I literally told the staff, and I said this without being insulting, it's cleaner than I remember. I think it's under new management.
Oh.
Because the place used to be really dumpy and now it's not. So that was a fun surprise. The challenge today is that it was dead. I was there from 4 to 6 and it
was going to ask.
Really, really slow. It's a lot more fun when it's busy.
Mm-hmm.
But when it's really, really dead, I end up just wandering around looking at things. And that's when I made the realization today that a bottle of Carlo Rossi peach sangria is only one penny more than a bottle of Welch's white grape peach juice. And so for the additional one penny, you can get one that will fuck you up and make you feel miserable.
It's a bargain.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah, exactly. But yeah, sometimes it's busy. People don't like free samples as much as I thought they would, which is surprising to me. Like, I guess it's just because I go on something called the chicken run when I go to the mall food court and eat all the chicken samples. And like when I go to Costco or Sam's Club or whatever, that's like a feast to me.
Yeah, I'm not a sampler person. I stay away from all of that stuff. I don't trust it. I don't trust free stuff.
A lot of people apparently don't trust free stuff. And I talk to people and I'm just like, I don't know. I don't get paid by the sale. I'm paid to be here so that you can try this. So to try it, try another. If my bosses are listening, I never
try
let
it.
People try more than one. But if they're not listening, sure, you can try all four. What do I care? Hmm. So, yeah, not that I would ever violate liquor dispensing laws and overserve a sample of. Yeah, it's 4.5 APV. You could drink the whole can and you'd be fine.
You got to make up for all the other people that aren't taking samples.
Yeah, exactly. That's it. But yeah, it's a pretty solid hustle. It's all been remote. I've met one of my colleagues once because I did one tasting of this same stuff in a bar, one happy hour, and it was a day when the weather was really shitty. So again, it was really dead. So we were basically just walking around giving whole cans of the stuff to people. And yeah, so sorry I was late, but that's why, because I came home. And then as I texted you all, I needed 5 minutes because I was wharfing down dinner. But I think I have found another gig that I really like, because it's very similar to when I was hosting Trivia all those years, except that instead of somebody wanting to punch me because they were wrong and didn't like it, they either have a sample and like it and maybe buy what I'm selling. Or my worst response today was a guy saying, "No thanks, bub." And then he kept walking. I've never been called bub before.
Oh, that's what I call my son.
That's aww. Sweet. It's a cute little name.
Yeah. Well,
it's a little strange to say to a stranger, but
a little bit. Jeremy, you can call me Bob anytime.
All right. Bobby, I have a question. So I've done like trade shows, and I'm sure you have done many. And I definitely get like in a rut where I have like three go-to jokes that I will do as like crowds are coming by. Like I just get on some kind of weird script. Do you have some like go-to bits that you like cycle throughout the night?
Yeah. As you asked for my patter earlier, my pitch, and it depends on what I'm sampling, obviously, because they change. But I've been doing a lot of this Sun Cruiser lately. I'm doing another one tomorrow. And they want us to emphasize that it's only 100 calories a can. And obviously, some people care about that, and some people don't at all care about that. So when I get like bro-y, you know, gym lifting kind of college kids, like I did a few of those today because I was in a college neighborhood, I will look at them and I'll say, looks like you guys aren't very worried about it, but it's only 100 calories a can. And that usually gets a nice dumb laugh out of them.
I like it.
Shit like that. Other than that, though, really, people are always like, they're in a hurry. And I'll just say, like, you'd be shocked how quickly I can pour a 1 ounce pour.
Yeah, on your way out to the
but
car.
Other than that. Yeah. But that's kind of it.
Now, the other question is, what kind of sampling of the merchandise do you do during these long, dead, boring periods?
Well, I mean, I always open, like I have four flavors out for sample tonight, and I'll always try one of each at the start of the shift, as if they've changed. They'll never change. But in part, it's because when I'm putting them back in the ice, if they're full to the absolute top, it's impossible not to spill them.
Huh.
So I'll always pour a little off each one and do like a, you know, an opening sample to myself. If I'm bored, I'll start drinking a little more of them. But it's not like I'm sampling hard liquor. Now, I have signed up to try to also do some of the hard liquor stuff, in which case I will probably not keep doing shots over and over again. And when you sample that, you're supposed to give people like a dropper full, like just the littlest, tiniest drop. But so far, I have not had enough to drink to be even mildly inebriated while on the job doing this. This is not like being a bartender and people buying you shots or doing shots with the customers.
Not yet.
It's not nearly that interesting.
He only drinks a sample when somebody says no thanks. Like for right, every exactly. person that walks by, he has to use their sample.
Well, I can tell you it was really slow tonight, so I greeted every single person who came into the store in that 2 hour window. And that was 37 people.
Huh?
I know, because I have a little clicker. I'm supposed to keep track of the number of people I engage and then the number of people who sample. And I engaged 100% of the customers because I was in front of the door.
Are you running dual clickers?
I'm running one clicker And then I have a system for counting the number of samples to give away, which is that I back count the sample cups.
Wow. That sounds like
I'm
a
not
lot of
sure
work.
They care if I'm that precise. They're just looking for estimates. But I know that I gave 10 people samples out of the 37. So I guess that would mean I would have had 27 drinks for myself. But it plays to my showmanship. I haven't done any real much in trade shows, Jeremy. I've applied for it because, like, the problem with these brand ambassador jobs is it's great because it pays like $25 or $30 an hour, but I'm working a 2.5 hour shift.
Yep.
And they're only maybe one or two a week if I can take them. If I happen to be nearby, I just sign up for the ones that are, you know, sort of convenient. Except tomorrow, I'm driving 2/3 the way across Massachusetts because they desperately needed someone to offer to cover my mileage. So whatever, but it's not enough. I need to piece a bunch of these together. So I've been applying for all sorts of them. I even applied for one by like Renewal by Anderson, the window people. And I think that would be like standing at a trade show in front of a window. Being like, you should buy these windows. Yeah. And they already said no. So
I guess. Yeah, no doubt. There was an Anderson truck parked in my neighborhood this afternoon.
That wasn't me. They didn't hire me. I mean, I was like, I don't know. I'm a chubby guy with jeans and flannel shirts. Like, I think I fit the build of a guy who could hawk, like, easy, lazy home convenience. Like,
Bobby,
pretty sure I could kill it as a bath fitter salesman.
Stuff.
Right.
You are, like, right? made to be a trade show sample guy. I don't mean that in a bad way.
No,
it's
I know.
Your wheelhouse.
Yeah, and I'm not even, like, closing the sales when you're doing that stuff. You're just the one who's getting to put the names in the thing. Enter your win your free triple pane window or whatever.
True. I want to receive a call from a representative at a later date sort of thing.
Well, you know, Josh Boston, the father of my godchildren and one of my closest friends, he gets all those calls whenever I fill those out, so it's fine.
Would he presumably win the free whatever then?
Doesn't everybody? The free 2-night, 3-day trip to Tampa.
Oh, this isn't a raffle situation where you'd like put your name in the fishbowl to win a free set of windows.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure everybody wins the second prize on those. So legally someone must win the house of windows, but what everybody else wins is $100 off the third pane if you sign up now. Yeah.
It's a good deal.
Yeah. Other than how awkward it is to wear an all black outfit, it's been pretty good.
What do you mean?
Try
it's
being
awkward.
A goth.
That's basically all I wear ever.
Yeah, what's wrong with that?
Wow. Yeah, goth ladies. Yeah.
I had a friend that was goth, and one time she we used to work together, and she earnestly said one time when she got into work, she took a big deep sigh and she goes, "It is so hard to be a goth in the summer."
Like, I when I started this gig a few weeks ago, I owned one pair of black pants that weren't, like, you know, from a suit or slacks. They're, you know, a little heavier material. And one button-down black long-sleeve shirt. Basically, my music blacks, my backstage blacks for when I'm pinch-hitting as a stage manager or something. And one, like, shitty old black polo. And so I've had to, like... Like, I had to buy another black button down. I bought another black polo just because, like, I just don't wear black a lot. I don't know. And most of the gigs require that once in a while. I've got one coming up where I'm sampling some gin I've never heard of.
Oh, isn't all black slimming?
Yeah, maybe. Although I know I'm fat. Like, I don't think an all black outfit's going to change that.
I mean, it's not about like erasing your body shape. It's about camouflaging it a little. I mean, that's why I have like black drapey cardigans and stuff.
Right. The problem is with this job, for that to work for camouflage, I'd have to wear like a Bud Light package.
Count that out.
In the Slack, I just posted the required selfie with my station that I take at the beginning of every setup. This was today. So
you look so friendly. I would take a sample from you, Bobby.
See? Thank you. I had one person. I do count the number of packages I sell or whatever I'm, you know, sampling so that we can report back that I made any progress at all. And thank God at about an hour and 20 minutes in, I had one person buy the 8-pack. And I was so close to just completely having a goose egg tonight. And again, it doesn't affect my pay, especially because I made it really clear that it was a terrible choice for us to be there at this time anyway.
Does it affect your feelings?
Yeah.
That would hurt my feelings.
Well, I'm callous to that a little bit just from years of other kinds of sales jobs. And, you know, I can handle the rejection. That's no big deal. But
yeah, it's never personal. It just gets boring when you don't have people.
When I've been with Elliot and we're selling Girl Scout cookies, it hurts my feelings when people walk by all the time. Like, I get genuinely bummed out at the end of like a 4-hour shift or whatever, especially when you can see them like very obviously faking a phone call. Like, nobody actually talks on their phone like that. We all know what's happening. And it's like, yeah, it always bumps me out. So I have to go home and just eat a bunch of cookies.
You don't pick up the phone and just go, yes, the Johnson file. I need the Johnson file by 6 o'clock.
No.
I always just walk by and make eye contact and smile and keep going. Yep. Like, there's no need for any
you don't need
theatrical
to
anything.
Head nod, acknowledge you as a fellow human on this journey.
No thanks.
And if they call out to you and they say, would you like to buy some Girl Scout cookies? I just say, oh, no, thank you. And I keep going.
There you go.
Yep.
Just be polite.
Listen to Anne.
So anyway, just a little life update. So if anyone's looking for a brand ambassador, let me know. I've got some other things that I'm applying for and nudging for to kind of piece together. Mm-hmm. I'll report back as they come through or don't come through. But yeah, so far. Oh, and you'll see in the picture I'm wearing my fancy name badge. I take the picture with that on and then immediately take it off for the shift because it's kind of annoying.
It's a little bit short for a lanyard, I would say.
I got a big neck, and it is a short lanyard, so that's an unfortunate combination. I have to buy extra long neckties.
Mm.
Yeah, just a first world problem if there ever was one.
You could take two lanyards and make yourself like a little spacer, splicer.
Yeah.
Extension. Sure. That's the word I'm looking for.
I own longer lanyards, actually. That's a good point. I should just swap it out. It is a particularly short one that they sent me. They sent me all these box full of goodies with like the signage and stuff, and they're very nice about it. They're an awesome company. I'll even give them a plug. The company's called Sandpiper. If you happen to be a liquor distributor or brewery, you're looking for someone to send out to do your samples, Sandpiper. They're great.
Good to
know. But yeah, it is pretty short. I'll swap it out. It's a good idea. Hadn't thought of that. I'm also Instacarting a little bit on the side just because I like grocery shopping.
Sorry, I have one more question and then I'll stop pestering you.
No, pester.
What is the ideal like height for the lanyard? Like, in a perfect world, where would you want the bottom of the name tag to be?
It's a good question. I haven't thought about it too much.
Are we going belly button?
I mean, belly
that
button.
Would be as low as you'd ever want to go, right?
Well, I'm not a lanyard guy.
There was a rule at my old job that it couldn't be below your waist.
Well, that's good, because the people who wear them on their belts,
yep.
Then you just inadvertently look like staring at their crotch or their ass.
Yep. Exactly.
Yeah. I'm going to go with, give me 2 inches above the belly button. I'm modeling it here.
Yeah, that's about right.
Working through it in real time. It's not like a necktie, where the tip of the necktie should reach the top of your belt. Unless you're a former president of the United States, and then you should be able to trip over it.
Right.
Yeah. But, yeah. And Instacarting, just because, grocery shopping for other people is great, because I get to hang out in the grocery store and spend somebody else's money.
God, that sounds like a nightmare.
That sounds fun to me.
I love it. And I try to only take runs at the grocery store at the end of my street. And so I'm getting really good at knowing where all this, like, it's fun and a little irritating, but mostly fun when somebody buys something I would never have thought of. And I'm like, where the fuck? For some reason, I couldn't find graham crackers the other day. They weren't with the regular crackers.
They weren't with the cookies?
They were sort of with the cookies, but kind of like on a bottom shelf out of the way. It was very weird. Yeah.
Bobby, besides like the criminally low wage, has the company like done anything? Like, have you gotten in trouble for declining a bunch of orders until you see an order at the store by your house?
Not yet. I'm a little strategical about that. I don't keep the app open for very long if I don't see anything good happening. And I'm pretty close to that grocery store. I'm not within, like, for people who Instacart, you'll know, if you're really close, you get, like, priority to see it before people outside the zone see it. So I will, if I'm bored and I'm just, you know, killing time, I will go sit in the parking lot near the store and catch those top ones on my phone, like, doing Wordle or whatever.
I've been known to camp out in Jack in the Box to do Uber Eats on a 2 a.m. on a Saturday night or whatever.
Sure. That seems like a logical place to do it. And I am pretty, like, I know where driving is good and bad for traffic in this part of the city, so I can kind of navigate that. And I'm usually tip hunting. Just,
yeah.
I think I drove across town and back the other day for a relatively easy order. I normally wouldn't drive over to that part of town, over near where Dave grew up, actually, over in Milton. But there was like a $25 tip. I was like, yeah.
Wow. Right.
Or, like, it doesn't show you what the breakdown is, but I was like, that's way more money than that drive should be, so I'll take it.
Is it like I know when I do Uber Eats, the basically without the tip, it's like nothing. Is it similar with Instacart?
Yeah, I mean, it's not great. When you first start, they give you a bunch of incentives for like your first 10 deliveries or something. And my original plan was, I'm just going to max that out and then decide if I like it or not. And once it falls, I won't bother. Yeah, I'm not driving across town to make $4 and putting the wear and tear and gas and time to go deliver 6 things across town for $4. But I've been pretty lucky scouting. I figure if I can make $30 an hour, like if I do it for 2 hours and I can clear $60, that's the ideal. Like, I think that's about as good as you can do. And of course, this is all 1099, so you're going to pay taxes on it later. So $30 an hour isn't that much comparatively, but that's always what I'm aiming for. And I'm also a fast shopper. I'm not like supermarket sweep. I'm not going for the hams, but, like, you know, I know that store really well, so I can usually move pretty quick. And also, I think the staff is starting to recognize me.
I'm always interested to hear about people's experience with that stuff, because I've been on both sides of the equation. Like, I know the crazy things that those companies do on the back end to, like, not pay people as much as possible while trying to, like, continually incentivize them to take jobs. And it's like, it's like, because I was the guy doing it, to be clear, which never felt good, and I left that company. But, you know, like, I would sit there and look at spreadsheets and figure out, like, who was the guy that was declining all these orders, or, like, you know, how many jobs does somebody need to do before they can get, you know, they're gonna get really engaged or whatever. And then that's why you are incentivized to do the 10 ride thing. And it's just, it's wild to me how, like, those systems are gamed.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it's totally gamified, but I feel like I'm also gamifying it back a little bit, if that makes sense. Like,
yeah, that's the thing.
Yeah. I'm treating it, you know, thank God it's not my primary source of income, right? Like, I see these articles, something online about, like, doing all these tricks helped me make $3,000 a month Instacarting. And I was like, okay, that's $36,000 a year. You have to pay the taxes on it. It's actually not great. Like, after you do that and then factor in your gas and wear and tear on your car, like, whatever you're doing to make that happen, it's a wage. And if it's the best way you can make money that you need, I guess. But, like, I am not, like, I'll be sitting here working from home, and in the early afternoon, I'll just throw open the app and I'll just see, oh, that's a good one. And I'll stop what I'm doing and go do it and come back in 45 minutes and just pick up my work. If you were on unemployment and had the choice between collecting unemployment or possibly fucking that up by Instacarting, I wouldn't fuck it up with Instacarting.
No, or Uber Eats.
Yeah.
To be clear.
Yeah. Yeah. So, exactly. But yeah, it's been quite an odyssey. We're also going to relist the house for rental soon. So maybe this won't be completely necessary, although, again, I'm kind of enjoying it. It scratches that itch, the trivia scratched. I was trivia for 4 years, and I always tell people the minute I stopped, I didn't want to go back. I enjoyed it, but I was done. This sort of fulfills that for me, because it's the same thing. It's show up, 2-hour shift, bring your shit, set up, have fun with people, leave. The difference is that with trivia, it was a little later at night. People were a little drunker and it got messier.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. People coming to the liquor store usually aren't drunk yet, which is really convenient. but that's it for me. And I think I've monopolized half an hour of small talk.
I have one more app related thing because I have to bring it up every time I'm talking about apps with people. But I would highly suggest, I mean this earnestly, like go Google Lyft Drivers Reddit, or, you know, just go on Reddit or any forum you can find. I usually use Reddit. Apparently they've sponsored today's podcast as well. But you can go on there and just read the experience of the drivers. And I think it'll help like inform how you can best like support the workers that are doing work at those companies. And the two things that I always say are like, never, ever, ever give them less than 5 stars. If they're less than 5 stars, just don't rate them. And, you know, I always say it would take something egregious for me to actually give somebody less than 5 stars and tip big, because the tips are like basically 90% of the pay. So those are both great ways to like take care of the folks that are doing that work.
Good to know. Yeah. I always tip an extraordinary amount for things like that, because I know they just live on tips.
Yep.
I find that to be such a bullshit system when you have a rating system, when anything less than 5 stars is unacceptable, basically, because then why are you bothering to do that? Like, we had a for our performance reviews for a while, we have a 5-star system, and our old director was like, nobody's getting over a 3. They're just not. We're not doing it. And I'm like, well, what is the point of having a 5 stars then? Make it 3 stars. Make it a 1-star or a 0-star. But, you know, if you're going to have this scale, use it to its full capacity. And I mean, I totally agree with what you're saying, Jeremy. I just think it's sort of fucked up that you have to go to the lengths to be 5 stars or nothing.
Yeah. Yeah. It's dumb.
So profound.
But that's the it's dumb. The gig economy.
Yep.
You know what's not dumb?
What?
The answers to last week's question of the week.
Very true.
Transition.
Tell me more.
Our question of the week last week was, what movie makes you think of Alaska or Hawaii? Elaine says, Alaska, Togo, 2019, about the serum run to Alaska and the dog who should have gotten more credit than Balto. I'm a sucker for an inspirational dog movie.
Shade also, against Balto.
Yeah, really. Hawaii is Tora Tora Tori, 1970, about the Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor. This is because I was a teenage film nerd.
Yeah, that's one that I have heard of, but I've not gotten around to watching.
I haven't seen it either.
Yeah.
Daniel says, I think of the 1966 adaptation of James Michener's novel Hawaii with Max von Sydow and Julie Andrews as missionaries in the early 19th century. Also with Richard Harris.
Don't we all? But it seems pretty obvious. I think we skipped that one because it seemed too obvious.
Hawaii. It's right there in the name. Also with Richard Harris, Gene Hackman, Carol O'Connor, and a young Bette Midler as an extra. That sounds exciting.
It makes me smile because that's the era of those novels, like 60s and 70s and 80s, that it was all those big name geopolitical, not necessarily thriller novels, but like Michener and James Clavell and, oh God, Ken Follett and all of that stuff. Like, you don't quite see novels like that anymore.
Mm-hmm.
The ones that all of our parents read.
Yep. Jennifer says, Forgetting Sarah Marshall, The Descendants, and 51st Dates.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Michael says, Jennifer got two of mine, Descendants, one of our favorites.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Laura says, Hawaii, Blue Crush, fantastic movie about a woman trying to make it in surfing.
I saw that.
I think I did too.
I don't remember that much about it.
Me neither. I don't know if I saw it.
It was Kate. What's her name? Kate.
One of the Kates.
One of the Kates, the one that has a blue eye and a green eye.
Bosworth. Oh,
yeah. What's that called? Yeah, Bosworth. Heterochromia.
Heterochromia,
or something?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then Laura also says, Alaska, y'all covered the two I thought of, though didn't Cuba Gooding Jr. do one about sled dogs?
I don't think that was very good.
Doesn't mean it's really not about Alaska.
That's true. We never said in the criteria it has to be a good movie.
Mm-mm. We've specifically had movies that weren't. But
yeah,
only occasionally.
On purpose.
And yes, that would be Snow Dogs from 2002.
Right.
He's a Miami dentist who finds he's been named in a will. He travels to Alaska to claim his inheritance. How many movies start with that premise? That would be...
Seriously.
Maybe we should work on that. That's just like the, oh, she's a reporter who has to get the scoop.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, sorry. Continue.
And then Madison says, Alaska, 30 Days of Night, White Fang, and Into the Wild. Covered that.
Madison.
Last one.
I came this close to choosing White Fang, at least yeah. the Ethan Hawke one. But when I looked it up, it was filmed in Alaska, but it's set in the Yukon. So technically, not Alaska.
And then Hawaii, Just Go With It, Forgetting Sarah Marshall, and Blue Crush. A couple of repeats here. Yep. Tierra says 30 Days of Night and Lilo and Stitch.
I almost picked Lilo and Stitch just for the hell of it.
I've never seen it.
No, me neither.
And finally, Colian says Mystery Alaska, Insomnia, You Guys Named My Hawaii One.
And we watched your Alaska ones.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We picked good.
Mm-hmm. We did. Are we really done? That's the mailbag. I don't want to be done. I mean, I do want to take a break, but I feel
like we could come up with other themes.
Honestly, when I was thinking about going to Jambo the other night and discussing what kind of topic we would have, I was like, I feel so empty without the cinema road trip anymore.
Right? I know, we don't have that to fall back on anymore. What are we going
to
do?
We don't have that goal to push towards.
Can we just go to Nevada?
I guess.
Sure.
We kind of neglected Nevada.
I know. It's a casino.
Yeah. Reno 911 probably made a TV movie at some point.
Probably.
Yeah.
I would watch that. All right. Well, with that, thank you, everybody. Shall we move to the medium talk? Jeremy, please step up to the plate. We have talked recently. Last week, Hillary talked about her eclipse experience. Bobby, you talked about yours. But Hillary did mention that, Jeremy, you came all the way down from Seattle to Dallas to be in the path of totality for the eclipse. And you drove, you crazy motherfucker. And we need to hear about this.
6 years ago, this story starts 6 years ago. Elliot and I drove down to Salem, Oregon to be in the path of totality for a eclipse down there. And it took like 5 hours to get there and I think like 13 hours to get back. It was wild. But... it was honestly, for whatever reason, it was like a really powerful experience. And I think everybody had kind of has talked about that on the news, and you guys probably have. But it was like a really, really fond memory that I had. Christy and Elliot actually got me like a tattoo as a birthday gift, but they didn't tell me what it was until they started tattooing it, which was
oh my
very
God,
exciting.
That's some trust there.
But it, you know, it was
it's
a
weird
little...
that it's "Don't Tread on Me." Which...
yeah. No,
the
it was like
the
a little.
Is, what should Jeremy's tattoo have been? I just want to open up that now.
It was
sorry.
That's okay. It was a little like moon thing. Anyway, so I thought it would be fun for Elliot and I to drive down together, because we usually drive down or on the way to go to California at Christy's dad's house, but that didn't work out this year. So we have this special spot in like Utah, Arizona that we always go to. And I have like a series of pictures of Elliot in the exact same spot from the last, I think, 3 years. And so I wanted to make sure to get one for this year. And it's just like this special spot that me and them have. So we knew that we were at least going to be heading that direction. I was just looking at the first kind of leg of driving that we did. And it looks like it was about 1,200 miles. So it was like 26 hours of drive time, I think. It was an adventure. But we left Thursday night, and drove through the night with a couple of brief intermissions where I took a nap for an hour or two, which, by the way, I hate sleeping in cars. It like grosses me out, like the stuffiness and just like the feeling that you get when you wake up in the morning. And I got these like stretchy net things that go over basically the top half of your door. And so you can roll down your windows all the way, but still have like make it so bugs won't get in. Perfect solution for sleeping in your car. But yeah, so we drove through the night, got all the way to this place called Valley of the Gods. And that's where we like spent the first night. If you don't include the part where we slept in the car.
Is that Nevada, Valley of the Gods?
It's in southern Utah.
Yeah.
Right by this place called Mexican Hat, which is called Mexican Hat because they couldn't figure out how to spell sombrero.
No. Oh, dear.
America.
I drove through some crazy towns. I drove through another one in Texas that was just openly called White Settlement.
Oh, I've been through there plenty of times.
Slave Creek. Should probably just not keep rattling these off. But, God, I was like very, very elitist left coast snobbery.
Sure. Well, you know, in New York, not where I live, but where I once lived, the village of Whitesboro is the town that has the flag of the white person choking out the Indian.
Yeah. We've talked about that.
And it's literally Whitesboro. So, you know, that kind of racism transcends all regions of America.
Yes.
Yes, it does.
So I will say when we got to the campsite, it was extremely windy, like extremely, extremely windy. Like my sleeping bag just fully flew like 20 feet down the thing until it got snagged in a bush. And I had a rock on top of it, but it still like slid out from underneath it. So, Elliot really wanted to sleep outside because like, that's just what we usually do. And I was like, all right, we'll figure out a way. I'll share the video with you guys. I have a pretty funny video showing it, but we basically made this little, like I took the edge of the tarp and closed it in the passenger front and rear doors, and then to make like a little lip to block the wind from getting under the car, and then stretched it out, and then had to put rocks on everything. Like I was literally like tying like I put a rock in the bottom of Elliot's sleeping bag and then tied it down there so it wouldn't, you know, they wouldn't kick it or whatever in the middle of the night. But had to like strap down everything or tie it together, actually slept pretty well through the night. It was beautiful. It was like pitch black, there was no moon, and of course like middle of nowhere, just surrounded by these very like iconic mesas and big stone towers. You've seen them in a bunch of movies. It's right by the spot where Forrest Gump turns around when he's running across America. And it was, yeah, it's like it's beautiful there. And it was a privilege to get to spend the night in it. And in the same way, like as we woke up, just seeing the sunrise come up those cliffs. It was beautiful. And thankfully, it wasn't as windy in the morning because I was very cold. And also, it was free. It was free. It was all free.
Yeah.
And there was actually porta potties there.
That is a question I have, because I have some questions for you, Jeremy. I want you to tell the road trip story from end to end, but then I'm going to ask your advice because I have a trip I want to take that could use some of these skills.
I'm ready.
Well, or, you know, continue on your journey because you haven't made it to Texas yet.
No, we haven't. So that morning we got up, we went to our little special spot. It's called Moki Dugway. It's right by Arches National Park, but you go down this, like, you're just driving down the highway. The first time I found it, I was driving down the highway. I saw a sign that said Valley of the Gods, like just pointing down this highway. I was like, Valley of the Gods sounds cool. Let's go there. So I turned and I was going down this road, and then all of a sudden it just goes like into a straight cliff face, and the road like zigzags up this cliff. And when you get to the top, I'm sure I've told this story 1,000 times. It's one of the most beautiful views I've ever seen. And yeah, like the first time I went up there, I've never had this experience before, but it literally like took my breath away when I saw it. It's that spot that I've taken Elliot a bunch. And I had the luck to take Christy there, I think last year. So that was fun.
Interestingly enough, I'm looking at Moki Dugway on a site called dangerousroads.org.
Yeah. Well, it's not as dangerous now.
Well, I mean, like, since I feel better then.
Since I first like found it or whatever, it was it's definitely, they put up a lot more guardrails and stuff, but I won't lie, it is extremely sketchy for sure.
You can't trust those nerds at the .org. You got to go to like dangerousroads.biz to get the real.
Exactly. Yeah. So this was, we were trying to figure out where to go next. We didn't really have a plan after that. And we had plenty of time till we had to be in Dallas. And so, we were looking at a map, trying to figure out different places. We made a plan. I don't even remember where we were going to go. And then Elliot was like, said they were texting their friend and that their friend was in Phoenix. And they were like, how far away is Phoenix? And, you know, I showed them on a map where it is or whatever. And then Elliot actually cajoled me into driving probably 18 hours out of the way to go to Phoenix so that they could see their friend. And so we got down there and I was like, what's the plan? And like, are we going to get dinner or are we meeting them at their place that they're staying? And Elliot goes, well, I don't know. He just texted me and said that he's at this movie theater. And so gave me the address, got to the movie theater. Elliot texted. He comes out of the movie theater, gives Elliot a hug, and then walks back in. And that was it.
What?
They just, just wanted to hug each other. Elliot was like, you know what? He was having a really hard time. He's been kind of bummed because his family down here is being super racist and homophobic. Oh. And I just figured it would be crazy to go give him a hug. And, you know, I'll be honest, it's not what I wanted to do. And I thought about it. I'm like, that's 1,000% something that I would have done in the past and probably would still do now. So I couldn't even get mad about it. And it was
in the past when you weren't the one who was paying for gas.
Oh no, I usually was.
Oh,
I was very lucky. I always had pretty well paying jobs because I would take like really, really weird ones, like where you had to work in the middle of the night or whatever. And I stole a lot of money from my parents, to be honest. But yeah, one time we drove down to Oregon, you know, it was like 3 or 4 hour drive to go just drop flowers off at my friend's girlfriend's cabin. And so we went down, we just took a selfie in front of the cabin or whatever with the flowers on it. And then left and went back home. Didn't tell her we were there or anything. And she actually broke up with him because she said it was creepy.
Well,
does that sound creepy?
I mean,
it depends on how long they've been dating, what the relationship was like, yeah. I guess.
Yeah. If I could only remember. Yeah. Blocked out most of that time in my life. But one cool thing that happened that I was actually really thankful for as we were driving through Arizona is I looked over and saw this like very weird looking airplane flying at a very weird angle with a giant contrail, and it kept on going. And I was like, that's definitely not an airplane. And one of the other great things about having Elliot with me is I get to do a lot less Googling and driving, or pulling over is what I meant to say, pulling over and Googling stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Putting the car in park.
Yeah, right. Four ways on everything. So as Elliot look what's going on, they looked it up and it was a SpaceX launch. So I got to see like a rocket launch, and we were pretty close to it. And it's cool because like as it goes up, the trail, it's not like a line that just goes straight up. It like turns because the Earth is spinning and like whatever, the rocket's doing its thing to get to a certain spot. But it's kind of a trip. And then the contrail just got bigger and bigger. You could see where it was zigzagged when the bottom half of the rocket separated to go land. And yeah, it was exciting. It was a cool coincidence that that worked out the way it did.
Yeah. I have a question.
Oh, Jeremy. Yeah, go.
These are the incredible stops that you and Elliot are making on these drives. What do the two of you do when you're actually just in the car driving? Like, that's a long time in the car with someone, with anyone.
Yeah.
Is it music? Is it audiobooks and podcasts? Is it just a lot of conversation, or is it just like awkward silence? I'm just curious. I hadn't thought of this question until just now, but well, is it a lot of Googling things?
I mean, I will say that like Elliot is in their adolescence. They're 13, and so they do hate me. So there's a lot of just awkward silences for sure.
Don't grow out of that in 10 to 30 years.
We'll see. We'll see. There is lots of like quiet time, not intentional, but just kind of whatever. Sometimes I'll put headphones on.
I mean, they hate you, but they wanted to go on this road trip, right?
Oh, no, I made them. No. Yeah, they did.
Oh, okay. Okay.
I would never make them do that.
Well, it crossed my mind because I'm a good husband, and so I drive Sam to work when she's downtown, and we end up in the car for like
brave of you
45 minutes at a time, like early, like 7:30 in the morning. And for whatever reason, I don't know how we landed in this group, but even when we're on longer road trips, we rarely turn the radio on. We don't listen to the same. She doesn't really listen to podcasts at all. Thank God. So she doesn't hear this one. And, it's not that we have different taste in music. It's just that, I don't know. Like, we just don't. So we end up talking a lot, but then we also just end up being in silence a lot, which is kind of nice sometimes. And I'm usually, you know, relatively, I'm always the driver, so I'm always paying attention to the road, and just don't. It's weird to me that we're always so quiet, and yet somehow we just are in the car. I don't know. This is like when I learned that some people don't have an inner dialogue, like an inner monologue. And it freaked me out because I'm constantly talking to myself in my head.
Yep.
So it's not, I guess, silent to me because I'm having a conversation with myself the whole time. Who else is going to call me dumb constantly? Well, I mean, Christy, Elliot, us behind your back. No.
Yeah. Anyway. That is another thing that I do is I definitely load up my like whatever, my phone, I was going to say like podcatcher or something, with like lots of media that I want Elliot to be exposed to, whether it's just like whatever news or politics or whatever. Because much like me, once something hooks into their brain, they're like all in and it becomes something that we can enjoy together. And you know, it's also like just fun stuff for probably almost a year over the course of a bunch of trips. We listened to Whatever Happened to Pizza at McDonald's, and that was just like our go-to thing, which, by the way, if you haven't, go, there's my tea she recommends, is whatever happened to pizza at McDonald's.
I've fallen off that, but it is an amazing art project that continues.
Yeah,
I did buy his book, How to Become an Investigative Journalist.
It's amazing. Yeah. Yeah. And then the other fun thing that happened with Elliot having a phone besides being able to Google stuff is like we could take turns DJing. And so I got to learn a lot about the types of music that Elliot's into, which is weirdly a lot of the same stuff that I was into
25
years ago. So, yeah.
Can you some examples? I'm just curious. We should just have Elliot on next. I mean, that would cut to the chase of this conversation. But... Oh,
if you want somebody to come on and talk some shit, that's definitely the right person. Yeah, I think Blink 182. There's a lot of that.
Sure.
Like Green Day.
Oh, I was gonna. I'm so proud of myself. Smashing I was Pumpkins. Gonna guess Green Day.
I was about to say anything that they would play on the end, but none of you.
Yeah, kind of like pop punky.
Yeah, yeah, a lot of pop punk and that.
I think I think all of our markets have some station like the end. So
I think it may be called the end here. Yeah.
Well, I digress. You were in Utah, and I got us sidetracked, and then you went to Phoenix.
Right.
We were somewhere on the road in Arizona.
And, yeah. How did we get from Arizona to Dallas?
We took a we took a I guess if we're pointing down, we took a left as we're driving south once we hit Phoenix, and just like pretty much straight shotted ish to West Texas. I thought it'd be fun to go out in the desert there. I'm like scanning through the pictures to make sure I actually tell you guys the right order. But we went to this place. Do you know where Odessa is?
I do.
Aren't there oil fields or something in Odessa?
There are a lot of oil fields. Oh my gosh. Okay, wait. I gotta back up. Some crazy shit happened coming through New Mexico. But yeah, there's a lot of oil fields, and like I've been down there before in my dinky little Prius. I have like this tiny little Ford, like the compact Prius, and it's baby blue. And like people have made jokes in the past or been rude or whatever. But this last time that I was in Texas, like I have never experienced just like open hatred and road rage. Like it was wild. Literally the entire time I was in Texas, people were being like openly hostile towards the little baby blue Prius, which I'd never experienced it to that
Prius
level before
in Texas.
Yeah it was wild. Like I get it. I figured it'd be like, you know, people make jokes or whatever. It's definitely lots of rolling coal for sure, we'll say that. And but yeah, it was like vitriolic this time around. It was weird. But yeah. All right. So when we're coming through, I think it was on the border of Arizona and New Mexico. I saw all these like blinking lights and it said some kind of checkpoint ahead or whatever. And down here, when we drive down I-5 down into California, there's like multiple spots where you have to pull over and they're like, do you have any fresh fruit in the car? And whatever, because they're trying to make sure we don't infest their crops. And so we're driving through, and I just figured it was one of those. Elliot was sleeping in the back, so I just yelled back to him, like, hey, just cover up all the way with the blanket, and like we'll be good. We have to go through this little checkpoint thing. They were half asleep. I don't even know if they heard me. I pulled the blanket over their head. So I get closer to the thing, and I see the sign, and it says immigration checkpoint. And there's this big blinking like reader board that says, prepare your immigration documents. And at first, I thought I had accidentally like driven across the border or something. I'm like, how did this happen? And then, you know, I double checked, and sure enough, I was just going into from one state in the United States to another state in the United States. I don't know if they got confused that like New Mexico is still part of the United States, but for whatever reason,
I've had that conversation with people.
It was,
oh, do you need your passport to go there?
It was wild. It was wild. I thought I was going to get in trouble because I didn't have my passport. But so like, you know, when you're going through the border, they have all those weird scanners and cameras and God knows what you're driving through as you go by. So I start hitting those. There's, you know, dude wandering around with his drug sniffing dog. And I started to kind of panic because I realized Elliot's in the back seat under a blanket and I'm about to go through this checkpoint. I'm like, the last thing I need is some kind of situation where they're tearing my car apart or whatever. And
they think you're trafficking somebody.
Yeah. And I had just told Elliot to stay all the way under the blanket. So we go through, I get up to my spot. The guy in front of me was talking for like, I don't know, it felt like 10 minutes. And I'm like, this is going to be bad. And so I get up there and I roll down my window halfway. He's like, are you a U.S. citizen? I said, yep. And he goes, just the one. And he like waved me through. And at that moment, I thought, like, what if before I get all the way out of the checkpoint, but after he waved me through and said just the one, Elliot sits up, like, then it's going to be really bad. Then it's going to look like I was trying to sneak somebody through. So
sure would.
I made the decision, like, usually I try and opt towards not interacting with law enforcement, especially federal law enforcement, but I figured in that moment, probably the safest thing I could do was to stop and tell them. So I stopped and I said, oh, my son's in the back. You know, it was the sun was just coming up. And I was like, we're just trying to get some gas at the next town. And Elliot didn't even move or stick their head out all the way. And he just waved us through. He's like, no worries, guys.
Well, because you're a white guy.
Yeah. Well, and like, I mean, isn't that dude's job to like find people hiding under blankets? I was like a foot off the ground and he was in a tower looking down into my car. I guarantee you he could see everything and somehow didn't miss the person lying under a blanket in the back of my car.
So how close to the actual border were you? Because aren't there laws about some, like, you can't like within 200 miles of the border or 100 miles of the border or whatever?
I have no idea.
Yeah, you have no rights. I live right by the Canadian border, and it's the same thing. It's Patriot Act.
We were coming through Tucson. Oh, yeah, because we actually, on the way out of Phoenix, Hillary was in Tucson, and we drove like within a mile of where her and Dave were on our way back, on our way to her house in Dallas.
That was as close as the restraining order would let you get.
That's right. Oh.
So I'm looking it up. It says Tucson is an hour's drive from the Mexico border.
Yep.
Yeah. So definitely less than 100 miles.
Yeah. I remember because when I was in Tucson the first time I went down there, I thought about going to the border just because you could. And down there, you could probably do it in an hour, or, you know, an hour and 15 minutes or something because you, you know, get out on the open road where there's not a lot of competition. Wow. No, you were just entering Greg Abbott's Texas. And so,
yes, yeah.
I assumed that they were stopping you to make sure you had a gun.
Yes, yeah, of course, of course. I did freshen up my mustache right before we went down, to really try and make sure that that I could play the part, you know, it for this exact situation when they're patting me down or whatever when I get in. So
right,
yeah. Actually, to be honest with you, my child is queer, and it was more nerve-wracking than usual to be making that drive, like just to have to come up with a safety plan for going to the bathroom and rest areas and that kind of stuff. It was wild to actually have to and think about that, and I can't even imagine actually being a queer person in that environment. So
yeah,
having that be a part of your daily experience.
Yeah, one of my road trip questions centers around car camping and bathrooms. And it hadn't occurred to me when we started recording this episode that the outdoor roughing it options for that still might be safer.
Yeah, probably. Jesus. Probably.
God, the fuck is wrong with this world? Anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just also, in a lighter moment, I did picture Elliot just popping up from under the blanket and going, hola.
Funny for a couple of seconds.
Exactly. It's all needed.
They definitely have been spending a lot of time on Duolingo. Okay. Yeah. So the next spot we went when we were in Texas was this place called the Odessa Meteor Crater. That was another, we're driving down the road and saw a sign for something called the Odessa Meteor Crater, and we had to go check it out. So we got out there. It was like a couple miles off the road, and it was interesting to see. You could like walk around the crater, actually the inside of the crater. But I will say that the crater itself is completely filled up with dirt that's like blown in there over the years.
Oh.
So it's not as much of a crater as it is sort of a dent. It's like 5 to 6 feet down. But they have a lot of pictures and illustrations of how deep the crater was, which is apparently about 150 feet, which is wild.
Wow.
And they have a tunnel that sadly has a big locked lid on it, but it's a ladder that goes down to the bottom, which is wild. And it's just like this metal tube sticking out of the ground, which thankfully had a little porthole in it that you could check out. The next little bit where we actually got to Dallas, because this is the day we got to Dallas. Very exciting. We're driving through, I don't know, whatever, through Texas somewhere, and we're on a 2-lane highway, and there's a construction project where it's merging down to one lane. So people in Texas, like, I don't mean to pick on you, but the whole zipper merging thing is, they don't do it very well. Everybody like just completely clears out one lane and extends the backup, I guess. And then every once in a while people zip down the side and everybody gets like super aggressive. But I was trying to lead a charge of zipping to try and, help people understand. And I didn't go crazy. I didn't drive way, way down there, but I definitely did tuck myself in between two semi trucks. And when I got over, I know, especially because my car is so low, semi trucks are so high, the traffic was at a crawl, but I'm like, I'm going to make sure this guy sees me. So I rolled down my window all the way and I stuck my head out. I felt like I was halfway out the window and I waved and I made eye contact with him so that like I knew that he knew I was there and I was merging in front of him. So we're crawling down the highway maybe like a minute or two later. And all of a sudden, there's just this whack on the back of the car. And I was like, did we just get hit by a semi-truck? And I'm like, okay, the car isn't like nothing crunched, nothing, no airbags went off. And then all of a sudden, boom, 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 there was like two or three more taps. And that's when I realized we actually had been hit by the semi-truck behind us. And
oh, no.
I was like, Elliot, are you okay? Everybody's okay. The car is driving fine. It really didn't feel too bad, except for it's something about having like the mass of the semi truck. I think maybe it was like a lot of energy or something, but my like lower back started hurting almost immediately, and Elliot had a similar thing. But so we get through, I'm like, I can't stop in this spot because if I stop while it's one lane, I'm literally going to block the entire freeway, which is already backed up. Not going to do that. And so we get through the construction zone. And I kind of like get behind him, but back enough that he can see me in his mirrors. And I have my turn signal on and I go to get over at the next exit. And he just keeps driving down the freeway. and so then I went and like got in front of him, not unsafely in front of him, but in front of him, and put my four-ways on for a minute. And then I put my blinker on and I started to get over into the exit lane at the next exit. And he just like gave me a wave and then just took off and like kept driving. And I was like, okay, at this point, it's not advantageous for me to try and stop this guy a third time because it's pretty obvious that he's not going to do it. And I don't really want to end up in a situation where I'm in a confrontation with some random dude on the side of the highway in Texas or whatever. So we just let him drive off. But, you know, another great thing about having Elliot in the car, I said, Elliot, get the license plate. They're like, I already did.
nice.
And then they started taking pictures and everything. So we had pictures and whatever. So I drive like another two exits and get off the highway and go and look at my car. And you can see like the bumper mark from the dude. He had a giant like cow catcher on the front. You can see right where it hit the middle of my bumper, and you can see where like all the gaps were off because it had flexed the whole like plastic bumper cover, and it broke the handle on my hatch lid on the back. But that was really about it. And I called our insurance company and let them know. And then I wasn't going to call the police because it was whatever. Generally, as a rule, I try not to call the police, and I figured there was no need to do it then. Then I called Christy just to make sure, hey, everybody's okay. Those kind of fun calls. Wanted to make sure that you know, right, because you may or may not be getting emails from State Farm right now about an accident that was just reported. So I talked to Christy about it, and Christy was like, you need to call the police so you can get a report. So I was like, fine. So I called. I didn't really know who to call, so I Googled Texas State Patrol and clicked around until I found some number. I called it. They kept on asking where I was. I told them the milepost, the exit I was on. They kept on bouncing me around to like different departments. They were like, seemed like irritated at me that I had called the first number when I should have called one of the third number they transferred me to, I guess. But so whatever. Cop finally shows up. He gets out of the car and just kind of tilts his head. He's like, we're not going to do anything about that. And I was like, okay, that's fine. He's like, we're not going after the guy. And I said, okay, that's fine. Yeah, I don't need you to. I just wanted to get a report. He's like, we don't write up reports for anything under $1,000. Apparently this police officer was not only a police officer, but an insurance estimator. I did not know that. I asked for his card, but unfortunately he didn't have one and didn't want to share his credentials with me, which was a bummer, because I would have loved to email him a copy of the invoice that where it cost my insurance $3,000 to fix my car.
Oh my God.
I didn't need him. I didn't care. All I needed was a report. He wouldn't even file a report. He gave me a piece of paper that had, it was like an official looking form, and then said, this is a self-report form. You can fill this out and we don't need a copy. Just give it to your insurance company. And I'm like, it's just letterhead. Like, that's all it is. There's nothing official. It doesn't have anybody's badge number, signature, whatever on it. It was just a piece of paper to like get me to stop asking for his business card, I guess. But yeah, that was our adventure getting to Dallas. And then that night we got into Dallas. And this is now Sunday night, the night before the eclipse. And we're in our hotel right by the Dallas airport. I feel like I've just been talking straight. Does anybody have any questions?
I think we're captivated, although you just said hotel, which surprised me, but I guess you can't sit in the car in the middle of a city.
Well, listen, I was still thinking about the police.
Yeah, I'm just picturing Walker, Texas Ranger, refusing to waste his time with your car. I'm sorry.
Oh. Well, and speaking of Walker, Texas Ranger, it makes you think about all the propaganda over the years that has tricked the American public into thinking the police are people that they're not.
Yes. Yeah. And I wanted to be a cop for a long time. And Christy literally changed my life. One time we were driving down highway here by a park, and they had like a big sign that said cops and kids or whatever, some kind of picnic. And I'm like, that's cool. And like, you know, kids can get to learn that like the police aren't the police is somebody they should go to if they get lost or whatever. And Christy just like offhand, there's three or four other times where she's done this to me, offhand goes, not everybody feels safe around the police. And a month later was when Michael Brown was shot. And it just like, I mean, it completely changed my life. Like that one throwaway comment that Christy made, just completely. Yeah. Yeah. It was.
Gotta listen to your wife.
Wild. I know. Christy's right. as we often say. By we, I mean
there's the tattoo.
Yeah, we've I've actually talked about that. Sometimes she would have me write it on my wrists before I went out when I was still drinking, which, you know, in hindsight, probably should have been the sign to me that maybe there was something problematic about my drinking. But I guess that's another story. But yeah, Bobby, like one of the things is it's harder and harder to find places to camp when you get closer to big cities, even in Texas, but also every place around there where people could camp and lots of places where they couldn't were filled with people camping or, you know, parked or whatever. Yeah. So it just made sense. Christy got us a hotel somehow the day before for just over $100, which I don't understand how that happened. But, you know, and I will say again, as a parent of somebody that is an adolescent, I was okay with being around a shower and have an opportunity to sort of freshen up and clean up that way beyond the truck stop bathroom showers and baby wipe showers. It was
sure
there was a benefit to that. So yeah, I asked Elliot if they wanted to go to the spot where JFK was shot, and they were not interested in doing that for some reason. So we went out to Whataburger, which I'd never been to before, and then
it's pronounced Whataburger.
What is it really?
Water? No, that's what Hillary says. That's what everybody in Texas calls it. It sounds like Whataburger.
Well, thank God.
Did you go to where Hillary was baptized?
No.
It's a highlight on the tour if you let her drive you around.
Oh, she's never offered. But that's
I'm only
that's
mentioning
good to
that
know.
Here so that she'll yell at me an hour and 20 minutes and her listening to the show.
Also, Hillary's dentist office Hillary's gym and Hillary's elementary school.
The red light that Hillary ran in the Sienna while I was in it with her.
I've done that tour with Elliot to the point where they told me to stop. But. Yeah, so then we went to Buc-ee's because Elliot had never been to Buc-ee's before.
Ah,
which is a giant. Yeah, it's like the mecca of gas station convenience stores, but they also sell hunting equipment and fireplaces and all sorts of weird stuff. But they have these. Go ahead.
I will only interrupt to say that because you all are not TBTL followers and Luke Burbank career followers like I am. You know, he did a CBS Sunday Morning piece doing the barbecue station at a Buc-ee's. Because they do like barbecue sandwiches and they're animated about it. Like they yell things out and it's performative. So somewhere there's footage of Luke Burbank in a Buc-ee's making barbecue sandwiches.
Is he trying to be the new Steve Hartman?
Well, there's no feel-good story about that. Just, you know.
Yeah, I know who that is now.
I like to think of Luke Burbank as the Mo Rocca was unavailable correspondent.
Ah.
Yeah, he's sort of in that vein of a little quirky, little light, but, you know, the occasional celebrity interview, but not the big one. Yeah. So anyway, please continue. And go to a Buc-ee's if you haven't, because it's worth the experience. It is like a Walmart of a gas station.
What is the Buc-ee's nuts or Buc-ee's
beaver nuggets?
Beaver nuggets.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you.
They're like giant corn pops, kind of, but extra crispy. I actually
with caramel on them, right?
Yeah. I got 3 bags of them to bring back to Christy. How many of those bags do you think made it back?
I don't want to take that bet.
0.
More than 0.
Hey, there you go.
Half a bag?
One?
No, yeah, one whole bag.
One whole bag.
One whole bag.
You should have gotten 10.
I should have. Well, she probably still would have got one whole bag. So the next morning, we got up and we were trying to figure out where we were going to go for the eclipse. It was totally overcast in the morning and was threatening to be that way most of the day. Chance of having some breaks in the clouds around the time of the eclipse. So we thought about three or four places. I actually had a parking spot reserved at the airport because right after the eclipse, I had to jet over there with I had to jet over there with Elliot because Elliot was flying home. Elliot was flying home like an hour after the eclipse was done so that they only missed.
Had enough of you.
Well, wow. Yeah. And so they didn't miss too much school.
Sure.
So yeah, so we got up the next morning, decided I was thinking about going to the parking place and like just going up to the top of the garage and hanging out there, but, opted to go see Hillary. Like, we can't drive all the way down this close and not go see Hillary. And the only way it would work is if we actually went there for the eclipse to her parents' house. So we went to go over there. It was about like half an hour from the airport, and I got to meet Hillary's parents. Hello, Kathleen. I have to say, when I first came in to Hillary's house and like saw Kathleen over on the kind of in the corner of my eye, I thought that it was Hillary's sister.
Wow.
But yeah. Yeah,
and compliment.
She's a wonderful host. She really showed us around the house. A lot of really eclectic art pieces there, photography. It was a beautiful home. It was great. I really appreciate that, Kathleen, if you're listening. Thank you. So then we went to go walk over to the dog park nearby in kind of the compound that they live in to go see the actual eclipse. And at this point, there's pretty good breaks in the sun or breaks in the clouds where we can actually see the sun. So we get down there where the eclipse is and, posted up with a bunch of people there. Long story short, you could see the sun all the way through the partial eclipse, literally the second that it hit totality behind a cloud. So I'm sitting there like, you can see where it is behind the cloud. And I'm like looking at my watch, figuring out how much time we have. One of the reasons I was excited is when we were down at the other one 6 years ago, it was like 30 seconds. And this was like 4 minutes where we were. So I'm sitting there watching my watch. And literally the second that the first sliver of sun came out from behind the moon, it came out of the cloud. And so I was like, you know, it was still really cool. It's really cool because, like, the world's lights turned all the way off. But the part of the eclipse that's amazing is when it goes into totality. Like, that's when it was like apples and oranges, a different experience from a partial eclipse to, like, being in totality. And so, you know, it was cool. I'm glad I got to be there with Elliot. I'm glad I got to see Hillary and her family. But yeah, I was a little bummed about that. Especially I felt bad cause I'd been like talking it up to Kathleen and Hillary, and everybody just about how like emotionally impactful it was and everything. And then once it kind of came and went, I was like, oh God, everybody's going to think I'm like some kind of weirdo now. Cause that was, I mean, it was cool, but it was like, it was okay. I think as Hillary would say, wait, she says it's okay.
It was fine.
Right? It was fine.
It's fine. It's fine.
Sorry, Hillary. So I don't know. That was exciting. Ran to the airport with Elliot. Originally, Christy was going to be coming, but canceled at the last minute. So got to the airport with Elliot. I actually had used a companion pass just so I could get through security. Christy was kind enough to figure that out because Elliot was a little nervous about getting to the boarding the flight and everything by themselves.
Sure.
And it wasn't like an official unaccompanied minor thing where there's like people to do that or whatever. So the security line's really long. We get all the way to the front of the security line. I go to scan my boarding pass and the TSA lady goes, "You're at the wrong airport." And then Elliot swipes their boarding pass and it was for a different flight at the same at the airport we were at. So Chrissy had accidentally booked me a ticket like at another airport, which, you know, it is what it is. Like, I'm not blaming Christy for it. It was just a funny thing that happened. But, you know, so then the lady goes, I kind of stammered through something to the lady. I don't even remember what. And I was like, Elliot, it's okay. You'll be fine going through, right? And I think that the look on Elliot's face at that moment and when the TSA person saw that, they were like, okay, just go back to the Alaska ticketing counter and you can get a pass. And little did I know, we could have skipped all of that, because if the passenger going on is under 18, apparently you can just get a pass to go through security with them anytime without having to do the full scam situation that we tried to pull off.
I did not know that.
Yeah. Yeah. Neither did I. Interesting. But you know, then got to wait with Elliot while they went to board the plane. They were asking why everybody was crowding to get in line. because
I'd someone to answer that question for me.
The plane leaves at the same time. It's interestingly enough, that's not something I can answer.
There are no good answers. I think the closest answer to a good answer is just the limitations of overhead bag space when they put that many people on a plane. But yeah.
Oh God, I'm gonna have to talk a lot quicker. Actually, the rest of the trip's kind of boring.
And then you drove home. The end.
Right. And then I drove home. Yeah. I mean, that night after the when I left Dallas, I was camping out in the woods somewhere, and it was maybe borderline gonna rain, and it was 2 a.m. by the time that I got there, so I opted to just set up my hammock and take my chances of sleeping outside or sleeping under the stars and having it it's not going to rain, or it's only going to rain a little bit. That's what my Apple Watch said. Light rain expected. So I get all snuggled up in my little hammock situation. The most comfortable feeling in the world. And as soon as I put my head down, huge thunder and lightning crack literally over the top of my head. And I'm sleeping under all these trees, tied to a tree, noticing that there's now a thunderstorm coming. Had to put my little tarp thing up in the middle of the night so I could stay dry. But before I did that, I was sitting there Googling, is it safe to sleep in a hammock when there's a lightning storm? I'm like, wait, Is it safe to camp at all? Is it safe to be outside? I'm sleeping under these giant trees. So what they recommended, in case anybody's in a similar situation, is try and find lower trees to be around. So don't camp next to the highest tree. I'm sure you guys know this. You have to deal with real storms all the time. I don't need a lightning explain you.
I mean, how conductive are trees?
They do get hit.
Yeah,
but
I don't want to find
out. Transfer to you by through being, a hammock.
I mean, the tree is grounded, literally. Right?
And it's wood.
Yeah, and you're not your hammock isn't suspended from wires, so you're actually kind of insulated. Right. But yeah, I don't know. I didn't really want to take a chance.
No, I think that's probably a good impulse.
Yeah.
Yeah, that seems fair.
So I got up the next morning. I mean, really, honestly, I did take the long way home, but I don't know. Oh, I guess there's a couple highlights. I drove into Kansas to see my friend Jeremy Henson. I think he's kind of tangentially related to this podcast, but a person that I met through podcasting 11 or 12 years ago, and he was
actually there this time.
He was
what happened the last time?
The classic June July mix up. Yeah, we had a misalignment of dates and understanding of the difference between June and July. So I went down there and he was in Florida. But so I stayed with Jeremy Henson the next night, went out to dinner with him and his wife, and got breakfast the next morning. Ended up sitting in this cafe, this biscuit place with Jeremy for I think 3.5 hours. I felt really bad when we left, but it was pretty empty, so I wasn't as worried about it. But
it was a summit of the Jeremies.
Yeah. The old meeting of the Jeremies.
How many days total were you on the road?
We left Thursday night, and I got back on the following Friday.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, way to go.
Oh, thanks.
That's quite a journey.
It was exciting. I think, yeah, I mean, honestly, so from there, I just went north, kind of drove through Iowa and, or Iowa? What's IA? Is that Iowa?
Yeah.
It's Iowa, yeah. Right? I didn't know my state still very late in life, you guys. But kind of zigzagged up the border between Nebraska and Iowa, as I've recently learned, through some scenic byway, whatever, then cut through the bottom corner of South Dakota and took a left.
Oof. Oh,
I forgot. I did go up into I went to Springfield, Missouri after I left Kansas City and met up with the guy that did the tattoo I have on my arm of the Dr. Seuss tattoo that I have that everybody knows about. Actually, Meredith, you saw it right after I got it.
Yeah.
So I went there and met up with him, and he touched up my tattoo, and we chatted. Another guy that I met through podcasting like 10 years ago. And yeah, took a left, kept on driving home. I was actually going to be home on Thursday at some point, probably Thursday night. And right at the edge of, I had gone up to the top of Montana up to Glacier National Park to drive through there. Right after that, I was driving and I heard this wah, 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 like flat tire sound. So I pulled off the road and one of my tires had shredded itself. And so it was a back tire, or it was a front tire. So I had to take the back tire off, put it on the front, then put the spare on the back. And then I drove another 45 minutes to another campsite, going, you know, 55 miles an hour. And so it took a while to get there, but it was close to a Les Schwab, like a tire place. So I didn't make it home that night. But next morning I went and got up first thing and got to the Les Schwab right when it opened. Turns out they don't carry a lot of tiny little Prius tires in Montana. There was like, for some reason, it was this tiny little town. There was like 8 Les Schwabs there. And one of them had one tire that matched my other ones. So it took me 2 hours to find that out. Then I went to the next one. And by this point, it was like almost noon or one. And I went to go talk to him, explain what was going on. And they were like, okay, well, you're leaving this overnight? I was like, well, I'd like not to, because I'm trying to get back to Seattle and I don't really have any place to stay. And they were like, well, we're on like a 6 hour delay right now. And I was like, okay, well, this is my number or whatever. Let me know when it's done. And they were able to squeeze me in. So I only had to wait another 4 hours, I think, 3 or 4 hours. And so ended up driving all through the night to get home. But lesson learned, need to figure out how to shoehorn a full size spare into the old baby blue.
How many miles does that car have on it?
170. I think I've put 100 of them on.
Wow.
Yeah, when I got it, it had 70. Priuses are good cars, man.
I never thought that I would start today, or at the start of today, rather, I never thought that I would be looking at a Google map of all the Les Schwab locations in Montana, but here I am, seeing a giant cluster of them in the Helena Flats area. 4, all pretty close together, yeah, and then a few more just down the road. So you really, of all the places to shred a tire, fairly close to the Les Schwab district was a good call.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I really lucked out as it goes.
Yeah, I'm a little jealous. I don't know if I could do that many days in a row, but I miss going out on long trips like that. Maybe not quite that long. I mean, I'm jealous. So, Jeremy, here's what I want your advice with. I mentioned this a little bit.
Sorry for talking so much, by the way. That's probably...
That's why we asked you to be here.
On.
Yeah.
I started getting a little bored till the end, so, or at the end.
Well, sign of a good show. I want to, and I've made no plans yet, go up to Alaska this summer. I figure I can budget about a week to a week and a half total. So I figure I'll fly to Seattle, visit all you people, and then fly up to Alaska. And then I want to do a combination of sort of bouncing around some of the port cities, but then I want to go to Denali. And I know there's a train, but what I really want to do is rent. I've been looking at websites where you can like rent a fully furnished camper van, basically. Not like one of those RV America things, but like, I think I found one with a 1998 Dodge Ram that somebody has converted.
Like a hashtag van life van.
Yeah, it does not have to be a $200,000 hashtag van life van that it seems like all these hipsters who are buying brand new Sprinter vans and making them beautiful. Like,
it's cheaper than a house.
Well, that is cheaper than a house if you do it full time. I get the feeling most of those people don't do it for very long. But like, there are a lot of, it's basically Airbnb, but with an old van with a bed in it. And I just, how does the BLM land thing work? Like, you can just kind of park anywhere that doesn't have a big cluster of people already there, right? That's kind of the deal.
Yeah. Yeah, they're all different. So some of them you go to and it's actually like a proper campsite. They have numbered stalls and there's like a host there and you go fill out the thing, even though it's free, and say that you're there. That's only happened to me like twice. Sometimes it's dispersed camping, so it'll be like a dirt road, and as you're driving down a dirt road, you can see kind of fire rings in different spots where people have pulled off on the side. But okay. Yeah, I mean, honestly, if you're on public land, like, it's public land, your taxes paid for it, so you can pretty much park just about anywhere. I've never had a problem finding a place to stay ever. Anywhere in the country on for free. So I use an app called Campendium. Right. You can like filter it down to where you're paying $0 and it'll show you all the places. You can go through and look at like comments from other people to kind of get a feeling for where you're going.
So Tishy recommends Campendium.
Yeah. Again, I'm sure I've mentioned 10 times on this show.
I don't know about that because I'm downloading it right now as you say that, and I didn't remember the name of it. So,
oh, I know he's mentioned it before.
I've talked about it before. I knew there was something, but I've just never. All right, so Anne's I'm not like, planning on.
I know 3/4 of this stuff, Jeremy. Sorry, I
but
repeat
that doesn't
myself
mean I
a
don't
lot.
Enjoy listening to you talk about
I'm
it.
Sorry,
yeah.
I'm not planning on a terrible memory.
Roughing it, yeah. I'm not planning on like going native. Not in the derogatory way that term sounds, but like, I'm not planning on, you know, rustic camping for weeks at a time. This isn't Into the Wild. I just want to go to Denali.
I was
going to
say,
back.
Meredith, you should never have let us watch that movie.
just to
not
be,
leading to a good place.
Just
sorry.
To be clear, I had this. I've been hatching this idea for months. So
you just happen to have that copy of Native Plants of the Yukon or whatever.
Yeah, I'm not going to eat the poison potato. It's fine.
Hey, I drove to Salvation Mountain with Elliot. He went there in that movie.
Yeah. I'm gonna get grocery store food and probably eat at restaurants when I'm in civilization and then just eat grocery store food when I'm not. I'm not planning on like trying to hunt or skin or prepare anything. I did think it was funny that the van listing that I was looking at specifically said no cleaning fish in the van, and I thought, I guess that probably is a problem.
Yeah.
Like, it there are rules that are rules because they an occasion has come that has made that rule exist. Yeah. Are there things that I should take with me? I mean, I've never been to Alaska, and I've camped. It's, you know, I used to camp a lot when I was young. But it's been a while since I've been on that kind of trip. So, like, I have to fly across the country first and then all the way up there. Do you have advice? I'm like, it sounds like I should just get a hammock, basically.
Yeah, I mean, if the tree situation is set up, hammocks are solid. And if you get a hammock, they're really cheap. You can get one for probably 10 bucks off of Amazon. That's what I've used for the last however long, 5 years probably. But if you do it, get an underquilt. it's exactly what it sounds like. It's like a half sleeping bag that sort of nestles you underneath it, and you hang it loosely underneath you so it inflates all the fluffiness, and it's like sleeping in a little cocoon of warmth. So if you do that, if you are planning on camping or driving through long stretches of wilderness, I would make sure that you have everything with you so that if the car broke down or you got stuck or whatever, that you could at least be comfortable through the night. Like, you'll have a little shelter with the car to sleep in, but stuff can get really cold really fast. So, I mean, I would definitely recommend bringing a sleeping pad, some kind of insulation. That's like the thing that will keep you the warmest if you're sleeping on the ground or in a tent or whatever. And then if you buy a sleeping bag on the road, just know that the temperatures that they're rated for, that's like the survival. That's like, you probably won't freeze to death if it's negative 15 or whatever. That's not the I'm gonna be warm and toasty if it's negative 15. You'll have food, bring water, grab a Bic lighter somewhere. They're waterproof and work out pretty well. Just kind of make sure that you're set up to be warm and dry if something happens. You gotta spend the night out there.
It's technically only a few hours from Anchorage to Denali, but I figure, it depends on where in Denali you're going, because
I've never been to Alaska. It's like Alaska and Hawaii are the only states I haven't been to, but I always talk about wanting to go up there, and every single person that has been to Alaska that hears me say that is like, Alaska will kill you. Like, be careful, like, take it serious. Think it's a drive out into the middle of the desert and whatever. So just be thoughtful, man. It doesn't take much for things to go sideways,
right? So Sam has been twice. Once was a cruise and once was some other kind of, you know, vacation trip, and I think on that one she took the train from Anchorage to Denali and back. I was thinking about maybe trying to drive from Anchorage to Fairbanks. The problem is I probably can't get a one-way rental on that kind of van. In fact, most of these services are like, it's going to be in the parking lot at the airport waiting for you and leave it there when you go. I don't know that I want to drive Anchorage, Fairbanks and back, because I don't think you can do a loop. Like, I think there aren't a lot of options for roads. So, like...
Yeah,
I guess you could sort of do a loop. I'm looking now and I'm saying I could come back down through this other stuff close to Canada. And I don't know. Clearly, I've done zero planning. My hope is that I'll have a vehicle that would be my shelter most of the time. And it would be summertime, so at least it'd be marginally less grueling. But I just want to go for the sake of going. That's why I've done so little planning.
Yeah. Yeah, I was delivering a trailer to somebody from the peninsula out here to Greenville, Tennessee, which is like all the way over in the bottom right corner ish of Tennessee. And I was having to fly back, but I wanted to be able to camp wherever. And so I bought like this North Face 100 liter. It's basically made out of like rubber. It's this big, thick, waterproof material. And it's big enough that I could put all my camping stuff in it, and including my sleeping bag and pad and stuff, and be able to fly with it. So if you wanted to get stuff ahead of time, you could always do something like that. Get a giant ass duffel bag, it has backpack straps.
I haven't had a hiking pack in a long time. I got rid of it when I was in shortly out of college, I think, because I just...
Oh wait, are you coming here first? Is that what you said?
I can hook you up.
You can take my shit. I don't know how I would get it back, but I don't know why I said shit.
I'm probably
going to
come back through Seattle too. I mean, not to play favorites here, but there's an airline named after the place I want to go, and to get up there from here, I most definitely have to go through Seattle first. Mm-hmm. So, you know,
is Will going to fly you there?
You know, I thought about making him.
Yeah,
because I've never actually flown a flight that Will was flying. I don't know if that would make him more or less nervous, having me back in the peanut gallery while he's doing his
thing.
He
doesn't care.
He's flown with
his wife
anyway.
And kids enough times, right? So
it's like ChatGPT.
I'm not actually convinced he knows how to fly an airplane. I've never actually seen him do it.
He's flown Hillary without crashing before,
Well, you know.
Yeah, and the moon landing is also true, right? Yeah. We don't know. We don't have any direct proof.
True.
Right.
What if Will and Hillary are in on it?
I mean, I've seen, exactly. It's a giant ruse. I've seen Will fly the sim, but that's, you know, imaginary.
Hey, it feels very real.
It does feel very real. I was proud of myself that I landed it. Very slowly.
He wouldn't let me land it.
Are you afraid he's going to crash it? It's a simulator.
He didn't want me to break the sim.
That would be impressive. Anyway, all right. I've taken some notes, Jeremy. Thank you for that. And I will keep you posted on the planning for that trip. I'm not sure exactly what is going to happen, but summer is coming very quickly here. So I got to get my act together and figure it out.
Well, and for bathrooms, you get yourself a 5-gallon bucket or something with a lid. Or if it's above freezing, you can bring a shovel and bury it. But you got to bury it like 2 feet down. Like you got to bury it very deep.
I remember those rules from, you know, old Boy Scout camping days. But
this is why I don't camp.
The place I went with Elliot had signs everywhere that were like, please stop shitting up the desert. And then they clearly broke down and just put porta potties everywhere. And the porta potties had giant signs on them that were like, please stop shitting up the desert. They're like, ideally, you should be taking your own waste out. If you can't for some reason, don't put it in dumpsters. If you use these porta potties. So,
Will, I need you to fly me home and not question my checked bags.
My checked bucket.
It's a fucking biohazard. Anyway, all right. That seems, you know, I think I can manage that part. And again, it's not going to be the winter, so it might be cold, but it won't be like frosty cold. Okay. We've talked for so long that I've lost the run sheet. Oh, there we go. Is it time for the question of the week?
I think it is.
Yeah.
Would you like to ask it?
Sure. Question of the week. What's the best road trip you've ever been on or done?
Yeah.
Best road trip you've ever done.
I mean, obviously, it's probably not going to compare to Jeremy's.
Right.
Because he has a talent for road tripping.
It's not a competition. It's just a certain style that some people like.
Where does this rank in your most epic road trips, Jeremy? Because you've been on many.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the one where I saw Meredith when I ended up in Detroit, that one is definitely at the top because of the terrible car I was driving.
But, yeah, the car with no AC.
I would say this is definitely top five. Top five, and I think that the eclipse and going to that spot, like the whole first half of it, being with Elliot and be able to do all that fun stuff was great. And then the second half of it, being not with Elliot or anybody else, to be clear, was really great. And I got to see some friends.
Yeah.
So, I would say probably top three, but I can't think of what the other one would be. I'm just sure there's been another good one that I don't remember.
Very good.
Yeah, and Jeremy, that part about being alone for a little bit. When I mentioned this in our chat a few days ago, it is very intentional that I want to go alone for a few days. I'm not moving out to a cabin to write a book or go crazy, but I do enjoy a few of those outdoor peaceful moments. Yeah, exactly. I need a lot of magazines and some scissors.
Some glue sticks. Yeah.
Bobby, I will say, it's actually the same thing that's I think is really special to me about eclipses, being out in the middle of nowhere, just these wild places where there's just nothing around you. For me, anyway, it makes me feel really small in like a safe way. Not in a safe way, but in a safe space way.
Sure.
So anyway, definitely it's like medicine for the soul in my opinion.
I have felt small in a Stop and Shop. And it's a very different experience.
Not small in a cosmic sense.
Yeah, you feel small when you wear all black.
Yeah. And?
All right. Let's do a quick teachy recommends before we wrap this up. I have something to recommend this week. It is a podcast. It is a true crime podcast. Now, I don't normally gravitate towards true crime, And I don't mean to disparage anybody who loves true crime, because there are a lot of you out there, but I generally get kind of an icky feeling about those podcasts that are like, let's pour a glass of wine and read the Wikipedia about somebody's tragedy. Like, it just leaves me with a bad feeling. But I did come upon... Well,
Someone's death, whose tragedy?
Whose death, though?
It's more about the gawking at it than the actual tragedy itself. But anyway, I came across this one from WBUR in Boston called Beyond All Repair, that is as classic a whodunit as you could possibly ask for. And it's the story of, I guess, instigated by this woman called Sophia Johnson, who in 2001 was 23 years old and 6 months pregnant when she was accused of bludgeoning her mother-in-law to death with a pair of fireplace tongs. And it sounds grisly.
Why not the poker, though?
Grab what's to hand.
I guess so.
And the crazy thing about it is the only person that accused her, that was the one person that could tie her to the crime scene, was her brother, who said that she did it. And it's one of those podcasts where by the end of the second episode, well, really by the middle of the first episode, you're like, oh, he's such a liar. Like, he totally did it. He totally killed this woman, and he's lying about it and trying to frame his sister. And then at the end of the third episode, you're like, wait, what? And then in the fourth episode, you're like, oh, holy shit, no kidding. And then in the fifth, like, every episode there's a new revelation that changes the whole narrative, and it's really excellently done. At the time we're recording, the 9 out of 10 episodes are out, so it's some wild shit has gone down, and it's really nicely done. The reporter is a little bit, NPR hosty in the way that Sarah Koenig established for NPR podcast host or national or public radio hosts, I should say. But she's great. She injects enough of her own personality into it so that I don't get irritated at her. And so it's really interesting. And I'm not sure, like, I like there to usually be a larger question about society or other questions, like, let's talk about racism in the Justice Department or whatever. And I'm not sure what the larger lesson is to this, other than, boy, this is a fucked up family. But it's really entertaining and really interesting. And so I recommend Beyond All Repair wherever you get your podcasts.
WBUR just laid a bunch of people off today, by the way, yesterday or today. So I got a news alert about it here. I don't know if this person is probably not caught up in that, but they're all running out of money, but glad they got this
one
out. Jeremy, thanks. Before we move on, and I think I told you we're going to make you do the get involved. What was this about Bones Coffee Company like 2 hours ago?
Oh, yeah.
I was actually going to jokingly have a bit through the whole show about how it was sponsored by Bones Coffee Company. But then I just forgot to follow up on it. That is what happened. But I will say that I did. Like, it was a real drink that I had, and it was really good. I usually don't like. There's a lot of ones, there are weird flavors like cereal milk and s'mores and stuff like that. Usually those weird flavors, it's not very spot on, and it's also kind of gross, but all of the ones from this company were actually really good. They were all really unique. It's cool art on the can. There is some American flags, a big bald eagle on one of them, which is odd, but what you gonna do?
Yeah, looking at their website, it's definitely not Black Rifle Coffee Company. So.
No, it's not as bad, for sure. For sure.
I mean, they are out of Florida, so all bets are off. One of these might be made out of bath salts, but interesting. I thought you were pitching it because you had like a referral code or something. I thought you were going to try to make a few bucks off
us. Well, that was going to be the bit.
That was going to be the bit. But then, like I said, I just, after I did it the first time, it didn't feel right. I just felt really awkward. I immediately wished I wouldn't have said it. So I think I just kind of bailed, half bailed, half forgot. But it's good that we brought it up to talk about it now. It's good. It's a good exercise in self-reflection, I guess.
We haven't had commercials as a bit in a long time on this show, but maybe with Mother's Day coming up, I'll bring Gary's Berries back.
I miss Gary's Berries.
Wow.
Gary also misses you missing Gary's Berries. Jeremy, tell the listeners how they can get involved with the show.
Okay. Well, by the way, Beyond All Repair was the name of my memoir. Womp womp. it's a biography that Christy wrote about me when we first met.
But she did. She prepared you.
I know. yes. Thank you, Christy.
She conquered the odds.
Somehow. Thank God my child is so cute. Only reason that she stuck around, I'm sure. All right. On that note, here's how to get involved with the show. You guys all know the ways that they say every time. I'm totally ripping this idea off from another podcast, but here's what I think that you should do is wherever you're listening to this right now, pull out your phone or whatever you're listening on and just record a message about the show, about where you are in that moment, just whatever comes to mind, and then send it in to tshishow@gmail.com. Because I think it would be fun to hear where you guys are at and what your like first thoughts are if you're still listening at this point, which I can't imagine is going to be many people, but it would be fun. And then also another place you can get involved with the show is by going to my LinkedIn. Just search Jeremy Holmes on LinkedIn. And you can connect with me there. You can send me messages about the show and I'll pass them on to the group if you want. But more importantly, while I'm there, you can, if you wanted to, you could browse through my professional experience, take a look. And if you happen to know anybody that has open roles or works at a startup or a tech company, just send them my way. That would be a great way for you to stay in touch with the show, I think.
So also, giving Jeremy a job would be a great way to keep in touch with the show.
Mm-hmm. Or Christy, either one of us. Hopefully Christy first, because not working is awesome, but not having income sucks.
Yeah, there are definitely positives to not working.
Yeah.
Oh, I forgot the ending part. Thanks for joining us, and that was everything. And sorry I talked
very
so
good.
Much.
Excellent. I
mean, you also skipped the website and the Facebook group and the AOL keyword, but that's all right.
They know all that stuff.
That's true. They do. They know.
1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 4. On the road again. Just can't wait to get on the road again. The life I love is making music with my friends. And I can't wait to get on the road again. On the road again, going places that I've never been, seeing things that I may never see again. I can't wait to get on the road again. On the road again, like a band of gypsies, we go down the highway. We're the best of friends, insisting that the world keep turning our way. And our way is on the road again. I just can't wait to get on the road again. The life I love is making music with my friends. And I can't wait to get on the road. making music with my friends.